And welcome to the Send Mum Club podcast. I'm your host, Gemma. If you are a regular listener, thank you so much for investing time into this podcast and my amazing guests. And if it's your first time listening, welcome along and thank you for choosing to listen. I really hope that you enjoy the vibe and the thing that I'm trying to create here, which is a parenting podcast with a difference, because it is all about parents of children with SEND in all its forms. I think there are some amazing podcasts out there for parents, and I listen to some of them, Happy Mum, Happy Baby being one of them. But the majority of the guests on those podcasts aren't talking about additional needs and disabilities. They're talking about typical children. And I think one of the reasons I wanted to start this is when I was listening to any of those podcasts and somebody did mention, well, for me, Down syndrome, because that's what my son Leo has, or any kind of extra need, my ears would immediately prick up and I'd be literally trying to drink in what they were saying. And I thought, I would love to create a place where you can come and hear inspirational people talking about their journeys under the umbrella of SEND, because we've said it before, the diagnosis may be different, but a lot of the feelings are very, very similar. And with that, let's get on to my guest this week. Now, I can promise you it's a lot calmer than last week's. If you haven't listened to the Father's Day special yet, please go back and listen. I interviewed my husband, Ben, and it was chaotic, to say the least. That is not indicative of how this podcast normally sounds, I will say. But my guest this week is Kelly Sadler. Now, Kelly is one of the guests, and I love it when this happens, who was recommended to me. Somebody got in touch. It was Kelly's friend, Becky, who actually I would like to have on the podcast at a later date as well. And she'd messaged saying that she would love to come on as a guest. And she was like, also, you should definitely talk to my friend Kelly. She'd be great. So I was like, okay, cool. I'll talk to your friend Kelly. And I had a conversation on the phone with her. And I was like, yes, she will be perfect for the podcast. So Kelly is talking about her son, Kobe, who is 10, who has an upper limb difference. So I'll let her go into that a little bit more and explain exactly what that is and what it means. But some of the things that we touch on in this episode are acceptance and what that meant to her and how that came about. Kelly got the diagnosis when she was pregnant. And actually, I'm not sure that I've spoken to anyone before who has had a prenatal diagnosis of something. So it was really interesting for me to talk to her about how that affected her pregnancy. We talk about the importance of how you are given the news that something is going to be different with your child and different on your journey. And we also talk about what needs to change within those scenarios. Kelly talks about how life is a little bit different with Kobe's limb difference and how that affects him day to day. And also, something that I really enjoyed speaking to Kelly about was representation in the media. And there was a big reason for this, and it's actually very exciting to do with Netflix. I'm not going to spoil it, but if you don't know, Kobe has done something incredible and it's brilliant in terms of inclusion and representation. And I love how it came about. So we're going to get into that. In fact, let's get into the episode right now. Kelly, hi. Thank you so much for joining me.
I'm happy to be on here.
So Kelly, you're here to talk about your son, Kobe, aren't you?
Yes, I am indeed, yeah.
First up, just tell me a little bit about him.
Kobe is 10 years old. He was born with a limb difference of his right arm. He is cheeky, charismatic, very sporty child. Just a lovely, lovely, down-to-earth, lovely lad. Well-mannered, very sociable, has lots of friends, just the love of my life as my little boy. He's just great.
I love that. So you've got two children, haven't you?
I have. I've got a daughter who is 14. Her name's Bailey. And obviously, then I had Kobe and he's 10.
Great names. Let's talk about Kobe. Me and you have had a little conversation on the phone prior to recording this. This upper limb difference was picked up. Obviously, it's a visual thing. So it was picked up on a scan, wasn't it, when you were pregnant?
Yeah. So we went for our 20-week scan. And as soon as, you know, obviously you lie down and they put the gel on your belly and you're watching the sonographer I don't, well, some people do, some people don't, but you know, you're intensely like watching the sonographer, and I could just see in her face, she just was like, I'll check this out again, you know, and I was watching her face intently, and I just said to Mike, there's something wrong, there's definitely something wrong, and he was like, no, you just, no, it'll be fine, and she just literally said to me, oh, can you just sit up and wipe the gel off, and you know, and you're just thinking, oh my God. But yeah, you're like, gosh, what happened? You know, what? And she just said, I can't see baby's right arm isn't measuring how it should be. And in addition, I can't see any digits. And I was like, what does she mean, digits? What on earth is she talking about? And she said, fingers, can't see any fingers on baby's right arm. And I was like, and then Mike just was, I think Mike was more in shock than me. And he was like, well, are you sure? Is it just, you know, the baby's just not lying on it? And she was just so adamant. She was like, no, it's not there. And she just didn't know how to deal with it. She didn't know how to articulate it, if you know what I mean. It was hard. It was a shock. But then you start questioning. I was like, are you sure? And, you know, you're kind of like hoping she's got it wrong and the baby's lying on it, or it's just not been, you couldn't see it properly. And she was just adamant, and I'll never forget. She was just quite, no, it's just not there. And, you know, we'll sit up and you'll get some more appointments in the post to, you know, to double check it. And I was like, well, if you're going to double check it, that means that you're not sure. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it was hard. It was hard, but yeah, from then on in, the journey continues of many, many, scans.
When she told you that, because I haven't actually spoken to anybody yet on the podcast who found out while they were pregnant like that, because a lot of the people I've been speaking to have children who are neurodivergent or have sight issues which would never be picked up on a scan. Mm-hmm. So when something like that is picked up, was that literally okay, go home, bye, and then wait for a letter? That must have felt quite crazy.
It was, and I think that compounded to, I wouldn't say not trauma, it's not trauma, just the shock, because it was just, yeah, we found this, and then I had no kind of aftercare. It was, I was kind of just like, I felt abandoned, and I had to go home. I literally jumped straight on the internet, which sometimes is a good thing, sometimes is a bad thing, you know, but I was kind of searching for like a support network. It was like, can someone just help me out? Does anyone know anyone with a child born with like no hand, no arm? And the first thing that came up on Google was the charity Reach. And then it had obviously pictures and links to all different sort of events that had taken place. And so that's how I then pursued that myself, which I kind of felt, that was one thing I kind of held on to, that was, I wasn't happy with how it was kind of handled, if you know what I mean. I thought it could have been so much better, so much better. Yeah, so I kind of just felt abandoned, and I had no support from the midwifery section, like kind of the hospital. It was just, well, there's nothing we can do, and it's just the way it is, and no leaflet. Just, you know, you just think you could do this so much better.
I've spoken about this before on here. I think it's a real shame that it really is the luck of the draw of who it is that delivers that news, isn't it? Because
100%.
We have been super lucky. When we got Leo's diagnosis, it was dealt with the word sorry was used, which in hindsight, maybe they shouldn't say, but at the time it felt like an appropriate word for them to say to us. But aside from that, it was dealt with in a really, really sensitive way. But I've spoken to other people getting exactly the same diagnosis, sometimes in the same hospital that we were in, whose experience was completely different. And I suppose that's the first taste of your journey, isn't it?
It is. It absolutely is. And as you say, it kind of lays the foundations of...
Yeah.
Of where you go and how you deal with it and how emotionally and you kind of look at the situation. As I say, if it had been dealt with a lot more positively, I wouldn't have been so anxious. I wouldn't have been so worried. I wouldn't have been. And guilt as well. Like I was saying, have I done this? Have I caused this? Have I eaten something? Did I wash my hair in a shampoo that I shouldn't have? Should have, you know, I don't smoke. I don't drink. I don't take drugs. So I knew, obviously, I hadn't done anything like that. But it's just, I still felt intense guilt. And I needed someone just to say, no, it's not your fault. It's just one of them things, or these things happen, you know. And I just felt like I didn't get that. And it was, I had to do my own research, my own due diligence as to going forward, how we deal with the situation, what was out there, what resources I could dig into. So, but I just, I felt vulnerable. And I was like, why at this moment in time when I'm feeling so vulnerable, am I having to do all this? Why, you know, I think I still hold a little bit of a grudge really.
That's understandable though. And I think that would be something that I think would be really difficult to let go of, because that's really when you need the support of the people, in a medical term, the support of the people around you, isn't it? Who are involved in your care of you and your baby.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even to this day, I said, you know, I would have loved, you know, even if like each hospital has just one, maybe like a coordinator, like a liaison type of midwife, specialist midwife, that if there is something picked up, if there is an abnormality or something, or if there is a diagnosis picked up, they should be assigned to you. Do you know what I mean? Like that should be their job, that particular midwife who can do research on your behalf, can have that one-to-one, you know, keep in touch, make sure you're okay, the aftercare after having that diagnosis.
That's such a good point, because I've spoken to people before and I've read things about, you know, people going for training and charities, you know, speaking to hospitals and even just saying, please, can you point people in this direction? Please, can you give people this website or this leaflet? And please, can you ask them not to do this? If that doesn't kind of sink down to everybody in that department, I think what you've just suggested is a really good idea, because it's not really just about handing somebody a leaflet, is it? Or pointing them in the direction of the right website. Because I think, and I won't say what it was, because it was somebody who was really, really kind to us. Mm-hmm. But there's one thing that always stuck in my head after I had Leo that somebody said to me, and she meant it in a really pot. She was trying to say something comforting and it horrified me.
Yeah.
So I think even when people have the best intentions and they're being very kind, you have to be so careful of how you're wording things, because it 2.5 years later, that still pops into my head and it literally makes my blood run cold. And I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that, because again, we had a very, so through that journey, so we got obviously the diagnosis of limb deficiency, but they used the word abnormality, but now the whole community, you call it limb deficiency, you know, limb different child, limb different person.
And can I just ask, has that medically changed? Would they use that terminology in a hospital now, or is that still?
I would definitely hope so. In the 10 years that's passed, I'd definitely hope it's changed. I wouldn't know for sure, because obviously I've not had to go back to the hospital, and I'm involved in quite a few charities, and I go to, if I get a chance, go to different events, and the terminology is definitely limb difference now. So I think it is filtering through to the hospitals and to the wider community is limb different. So
there's definitely still, in terms of when you're in that hospital setting, and maybe not with everybody, but certainly with some people, there's so much language I feel that needs to change. All we got told was a risk of Down syndrome, a risk of this. Yeah, there should be a risk of miscarriage, or a risk of something very bad. But risk would indicate that it's something awful that's happening to you. And that, again, sets the tone, doesn't it?
It does.
I know that those terms are still used for people having blood tests, or this will ascertain your risk of this and your risk of that. And I wish that people would just blanket say chance. your chance yeah. of this.
Yes, 100%. That is a much better terminology. Yeah, the chance of this happening
yes.
is this, 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 and this. Not yeah. risk, as you say, because the word risk is associated with something bad. You know, yeah. yeah, 100%, you're right. So yeah, that was, I just wish we had like a midwife person who is assigned, not just to people who having babies with limb difference or anything, like just anything that takes just a one-to-one, you know, that would benefit from a one-to-one. Right, I'm going to sit you down, I'm going to do a lot of research on this. And I just think that one person, that's their job, it would benefit.
No, I completely agree. So you had your first scan, which yes. obviously this was picked up on the scan, and then you got sent home with nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with nothing.
What then happened after that?
We just waited for a second appointment, another scan, and that confirmed, yes, baby has limb difference to the right arm. That was in the Liverpool Women's. They were amazing, being totally honest. They were amazing. And we had a full scan at that point of the whole baby skeleton to check everything else. And we got reassured that everything else is fine, spine, brain. And it was just the right arm that hadn't developed. He also told me it was a boy as well. And I was like, oh, I'm having a boy. I hadn't even known it was a boy. So that was a nice touch. That was nice, because it was, as you say before, I think it depends on who you get as well, because we had that was a really positive experience. And that consultant was so positive, and he just said, listen, everything else is fine. And it's just, and he just went to me, it's just a hand. And was so flippant the way he said, it's just a hand. No, you don't need to worry. You know, there's lots of prosthetics out there for when he grows up. And that's when I said, oh, I'm having a boy. Then we got transferred to Arrow Park, because being living on the Wirral, and we didn't have the greatest of follow-up appointments at that point. I won't go into it too much, because it was actually really traumatic. But we got given a consultant who hadn't even read our notes when we went to see her. We waited about 4 hours to see her. And then, so she was quickly reading the notes as we were in the office in her room. And she just went, oh, I see your baby has, I can't even remember what she said, limb deformity. Oh. And then, and I was about 27 weeks pregnant at this point. And then she questioned, and she went, and you are keeping baby? And I was like, yeah, what, like, why shouldn't I? And she, oh, no, it's just, I was like, but the way she said it, it was like, and my husband absolutely just lost it. He just stood up and went, Kelly, we're going, because we kind of caused a bit of a scene, not a scene, it was just, we were just like, I'm not staying here. I can't believe you just asked us that. You know, I'm 27 weeks pregnant. Why would you ask me that? And she's like, oh no, come back. And then anyway, this other midwife came and was like, calm down. And I said, I can't believe. But it just got worse from that point on. She was just then saying, I am so overworked. I'm so sorry. I'm so overworked. And I was like, oh my God. It was like I was there trying to counsel her. And I was like, oh, I've come to you. And she ended up saying how much she was overworked. Anyway, it was ridiculous. But anyway, I then went home, even though I was feeling so positive going in, I was like, why would she ask me? What? So I was then, it made me paranoid. I was like, why is she asking me if I'm keeping the baby? Does she know something I don't, you know? And Mike was like, she doesn't. And that was just horrific. So then I got given another consultant who was amazing. She was just like, listen, it's fine. You know, we'll monitor you, we'll scan you. I then went into a bit of a panic mode and was paying privately. You know, you can get the private scans where you yeah. can, it's a 3D, 4D. Because then I was then, but what if he's got no feet? What if he's got no feet? And my husband was like, he has got feet, Kelly. He has got feet. We've seen them. I was like, I haven't seen his feet. And I was convincing myself I hadn't seen his feet. So then I'd pay privately just to see his feet. And count, and it was so hard, because I'd not met him. But before I had him, I was thinking, but what, like, how will I feel when I see him? Because you question yourself, how will I feel when I see him, and I see he's got no arm, or he's got half an arm, and I don't even know really what it looks like, because I'm only seeing it in scan. But obviously I met him and I just instantly like felt the need to protect and love him. It's like, it's a different kind of love, isn't it? It's like, obviously you've got other children and but it's just, oh my God, just, it's like an instant, I just want to protect him.
So I guess all of that meant you couldn't really enjoy your pregnancy.
Oh, 100%. It was a journey of up and down of how I felt, and I was just felt so anxious of like, what will the future hold? What will it be able to do? What will it look like?
We felt robbed of that baby bubble. Leo was less than 24 hours old when it was flagged that our midwife suspected something. So mm-hmm. then obviously that's mm-hmm. all you think about.
Yeah.
But then I guess you were robbed of that lovely pregnancy with him and just be excited and look forward to it and imagine things in a positive way, because I guess your mind goes to imagining things in a negative way, doesn't it? Naturally.
Yeah, naturally. It just consumes you.
Yeah.
It's every thought and then you start thinking way ahead.
Mm, yeah.
You're absolutely right. It robs you. I felt completely robbed of that pregnancy. Well, after 20 weeks. And as I say, it was just mixed emotions. I felt guilt as if like I'd done something.
I think that's probably quite normal though, isn't it? Like, I felt that. Yeah. My thing was, this has happened because I'm older, because I've had a baby when I'm older. And mm-hmm. you read those statistics and the chances go up or, you know, down, however you want to look at it. And I was like, this is my fault. And it took me a while to let go of that. But I guess for you and Kobe, it is just one of those things, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's not caused by anything. There isn't an increased risk because of anything. It's just one of those. And actually, I believe that with Leo as well. You can show me all the statistics you want. And I just think you have the baby that you're meant to have.
Yeah, I think God has a plan, 100%. And I think, you know, you are kind of meant to have, who you know, that baby, and yeah. he or she is meant to be your child. And I think a lot of the memories as well, you kind of shelve, because it was so, it took a lot out of me. So I kind of like shelved a lot of it.
I feel like you kind of stopped yourself saying traumatic there, and you said, oh, well, it wasn't trauma, but I don't think that you should underestimate it. Like, that's quite a valid thing to say, I think, that these experiences are traumatic and it is trauma that you then have to process.
Do you know what? You're right, Gem. You are right. It was traumatic. It was. It was a huge shock. It was a lot to process. And that, do you know, also as well, which I think I found difficult, was quite a few of my friends and family were getting pregnant at the same time, and they were all having the, you know, their babies. And I was like, but why was it mine? You know, why was it mine? You know, and everyone else is, you know, having these babies and everything was fine. And I just felt, well, I didn't feel jealous. It wasn't like a jealousy thing. It was just why is something happened to my baby?
It feels unfair, doesn't it? Not that you want it to be somebody else, but you just want it to not be you.
Yeah, exactly that.
So I might be wrong, and please do correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't want to put words in your mouth. But I would assume that from Kobe's point of view, when he was born, did it make that much difference? I mean, in terms of what life would look like with a newborn baby?
No, exactly the same as what it was when I had my daughter, Bailey. It was it's just exactly the same, apart from crawling. He found it difficult to crawl because obviously he didn't have the limb. But as a baby, it's very much the same. He was born in August, so it was summer. So it was really hot. So I was putting him in clothes that, you know, like little shortened t-shirt or sleeveless tops. And then I remember, it does make me giggle now, but I remember an experience of, we went to a baby group and there was an older lady, and it was later on in the year, it was like December, so he had like a coat on, and she was like, oh, well, let's roll his sleeve up, like, where's his little hand? And I was like, oh my God.
God, you'd so die, like, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I was going, no, I was, and she just wouldn't let it go, and she's like, oh, and she kept rolling and rolling, and I was like, and I was just, and she was like, and I went, he hasn't got one, and she just couldn't process it. She was like, what do you mean? I was like, he hasn't got one. So she went, oh, and then she kind of stepped away from the pram. I was like, oh, it's okay. And she you could tell she was mortified, and
I was mortified. Everyone just was like, oh, what do we say? What do we do now? And it was like, oh.
She must wake up still 10 years later, like in 4 o'clock in the morning and think about like that. That would haunt you.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it? She was just rolling and rolling and rolling. Oh, I was like, God, you'd be there for a while. Do you know what, though? Through the 10 years, we've only had a handful of negative experiences of people saying stuff. And do you know what? It's always been older people.
Oh, and really? Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. And then we were in a playgroup once and this nan had a little boy and he was about five and Kobe was about two and Kobe was kicking a ball and the little boy was going, oh, he's got no hand or he's got no arm. And she went, yes, come away and just be very thankful that you've got one. And aren't you grateful that you've got one? You've got two, sorry. And I was like, she just said, and she was telling her grandson that he should be really grateful that he's got two hands. And I was like, oh my God. But again, I don't think it comes from a bad place. I just think it's, I don't know.
I think sometimes maybe you have to give people the benefit of the doubt that they panic and something comes out of their mouth that isn't necessarily how they would choose to express themselves.
A lot of younger kids are curious and they'll say, can I touch it? What happened to your arm? And they'll follow him around. But he's just so good. He just goes, oh, I was born like that. And then he's so discreet. He just like tries to sort of get away discreetly and not make an issue out of it. And I'm like, oh, do you know what? Bless, you know, he's so good at handling it. Like now, especially now he's older, he can read a room. So if he's getting the vibe that someone's going to say something or someone's like staring at him, he kind of just takes himself off and he deals with it.
That's really good that he's kind of learned a way to make himself feel comfortable in that situation. This is something that I'm nervous about, you know, is people saying stuff to me. I'm nervous about because it hasn't really happened yet to me. Mm. But I think what I'm more nervous about is people saying stuff to Leo and then like something mean or not even that, just and then him not really knowing what to say.
It's hard because you, as I said, it goes back to you just want to protect them.
Yeah.
You just want to take that away. We've had a few incidences where he's come home and said, I want two hands. I just want two hands. I've had to be very blunt. And I say, well, you can't, mate. You can't. It's not going to happen. That breaks my heart. Like, something must have happened or something must have been said or he couldn't have done or he's been in a situation where he's not been able to do it. So he can't do the monkey bars and he's determined to try and do these monkey bars just like everyone else. And I'm like, you just physically can't do it. And so there's times I've been in the park and I'm underneath him, like carrying him, you know, just underneath. And he's like, get off, I want to do it myself. And he can't. So he comes off and he's like, oh, I just want two hands. I'm like, I know, mate, but unfortunately, it can't happen.
You'd mentioned prosthetics earlier on. Is that an option?
Yeah. So there's quite a few on the market at the minute. There's one called the Hero Arm by Open Bionics, but I think they're about 20,000 just for the, So, and a lot of people get sponsored, but just that we haven't chose to go down that route yet because Kobe's not really asked for one, but he's such a sporty child. He wouldn't be able to wear it during sport either because if he fell on it or anything, so he's never really asked for one, but I do think in the future, like maybe going out, when he starts going out with his mates, maybe he might say, can I have one? Which will then obviously like, you know, we'll look into at that point. When he was two, we had him 3D printing took out, you know, was like massive.
Yeah.
One of our other friends who we met through the charity, her husband had a 3D printer and he'd made his son one and he made Kobe one. So they were the smallest ever 3D printed arms ever made. And I made it in, because we're a big Evertonian. So when I made it into like an Everton arm. And if you Google it, you'll see that we've put it on one of the Everton fan sites and actual Everton got wind of it and they invited us to Goodison and he wore his Everton prosthetic little 3D arm and it was more for show than for doing anything. But so we did that and that was cool. So he's kind of like, he's dipped in and out of 3D printed arms, but he's never really, never used them continuously. It was more like to look, he took it into school to look cool. Do you know what I mean? And he's adapted really, really well. So the consultants think he would have been right-handed because he's very right side dominant. So he's had to learn to write with his left hand. He's had to learn to do everything with his left hand.
I guess maybe you couldn't know the answer to this, but have they indicated that that would have been harder for him? Because it's not that he had the use of a right hand and then lost it and had to learn to use a left. Is it different that than somebody just learning to write?
What they said to me is it's because he was born like that, his brain will naturally adapt like to the other side. But they think because when he plays football, he is so right, he kicks with his right foot. I mean, he's doing it with his left foot now as well, but mainly with his right leg. So we believe he definitely would have been right-handed and done everything with his right hand. But his brain's adapted and he just does everything with his left hand now, which he's exceptional at, which is amazing as well. So we're just so proud.
Talking about his friends, does he have any friends with limb differences?
Not locally. All his friends have two hands, two legs. But I have been actively part of the England amputee football team for him. Not as much lately because we've had quite a lot on, but he goes to the England amputee junior camp. So they comprise of children with missing lower limbs and missing upper limbs as well. So that's a really nice environment, really sporty, really active. We're involved with two charities, as I say, Reach and the Limbo Foundation, and they are amazing. So when we go there, they hold like adventure days, camps, and we do that. And so obviously he gets to mix and be friends with kids who've got limb difference like him as well.
And how important do you think that that is for him?
I think in his younger days, massively, hugely. I think now, not so much, because he's maturing and he's got a great network of school friends and cousins and just general friends who he's a popular kid. He's a really popular kid. You know, he's doing a sport every night after school. We go tennis. He plays tennis. He plays cricket for his school team. So I think everyone just sees him as Kobe. They don't see him as like you've got one hand, or they just see him as Kobe.
In terms of now, is life any different than what it would be if he did have his right hand, do you think?
There is things I do need to help him with still. It's like I put suntan lotion on him before because it was just quite a nice day today. I put it on his left arm. Obviously, he can't rub it in, so I have to rub it in. He can't do his laces. We've tried and tried and tried. Even like we've watched about 100 YouTube videos of how to do laces with one hand, and me and Mike try just to try. It's really hard. Really, it's doable because obviously there's these people on YouTube doing it, but it's really hard. So we haven't cracked that yet. Cutting fingernails, cutting food.
And in terms of clothing, the big brands, people like M&S and I think Primark do as well, they have adaptive clothing, don't
clothing,
they?
Yeah.
But is that something that he would, as a 10-year-old boy approaching teenage years?
Absolutely not, no. He's into all the Montanex, you know, all the normal stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Big brands, we mentioned M&S and Primark. It's hugely important that those brands are doing that, isn't it?
Yeah, massively. And also as well, to be using models that are,
Primark,
you know, inclusive,
aren't they?
Yeah, inclusive and diverse. You know, Kobe's done quite a lot of modelling for Primark. He's done quite a few campaigns for Lidl. He was the hero child for Lidl during the Euros. They just put him in a t-shirt. He had his limb difference on show and he was the main child. And I absolutely love the fact that they've done that. A lot more brands do need to be more inclusive as well.
100%.
Yeah. And we do need to be seeing more of it.
This leads us on nicely, doesn't it, to representation in the media. because Kobe did something, and I still haven't watched this, and I need to. I'm so behind with everything. Like, we've only just finished White Lotus and This City of Ours. So I've got like this big list of things that I need to watch. And the thing that I'm talking about is Toxic Town that was on Netflix.
Yes.
So will you just tell me, well, for those that don't know, what Toxic Town is about and how this came about?
Okay, so Toxic Town is a true story based in Corby in Northamptonshire in the late 80s and early 90s. I knew nothing about at all. Again, I was part of Reach. We're part of Reach, the charity. And I was just on Facebook flicking and I seen a casting call from Melissa Johns. She was in Coronation Street and she's done loads of different things. She's got a limb difference as well. And the casting director had asked her for help on casting for Toxic Town because Netflix wanted to cast originally to be authentic. They wanted the kids who are playing kids with limb difference to actually be kids who have got limb difference, who are living with limb difference.
And that's important, isn't it?
Essential, absolutely. And I hope more casting directors and production companies follow suit. Because I did ask, I said, why have you gone down the route of like casting Kobe? He's not got any experience. And they said, because we feel that it's so important that representation, that the boy he's playing is obviously got, was born with a limb difference. We want the boy to play him to know exactly how he felt, you know, and he's living with it on a day-to-day basis.
Well, they did that for Wicked, didn't they? I don't know if you were a Wicked
fan.
I'm
not sure. So not really.
One of the characters in Wicked is in a wheelchair. The character's name is Nessa Rose and she is Elphaba's sister. And in the film, she was the first actual wheelchair user to ever play that role on screen or on stage. And it was the same thing. Like, they said that it was really important to them that she was, it was her. And then there's a girl who plays the young her and she's also like a genuine wheelchair user as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. I didn't know that, to be honest, but that's ultimately what you want going forward in all. So yes, we're seeing the casting call and then it was like, send a tape in. So I said to Cobes, I said, he was 8 at the time and they were looking for a 9-year-old boy with an upper limb difference, or it said limb difference. So I said, send a tape in, no acting experience needed. And then it literally went on. We had like four auditions, 2 in person, 1 Zoom, and he just smashed it. And then we got the call. Well, it was an email to say that he'd been cast. So Jodie Whittaker was his mum, and she was just amazing with him. Amazing.
Just list who else was in it, because it's amazing, the cast.
Yeah. So it had Robert Carlyle, Rory Kinnear, Amy Lou Wood, who just been on. Yeah. So she follows Kobe. Kobe's like, because I run like a little Instagram page for him and stuff. And she follows his page. She's lovely, lovely. Claudia Jesse from Bridgerton, the guy from Downton Abbey. Brendan Coyle. Couldn't think of his name then. Brendan Coyle. The cast list was amazing. And they just all treated him so amazingly. It was probably the best experience ever. He was just like, you know, smiling from ear to ear, and it went to number 1 on Netflix as well, which was amazing. And the story itself, if you watch it, it did actually kind of reignite something in me, because I was thinking, oh, because the reason all these children were being born with upper limb differences in Corby, there was a specific reason. It was a toxic dust in the toxic waste. It was going across the town. So I was thinking, right, okay, this is a true story. Obviously, Kobe's playing the part, but it did make me think. I know. I got told there was like no reason for what happened to Kobe, but what if there was? What if there was? You know, what if? I don't know. It just. But then I was thinking. But like my husband said to me, he said, "Well, what? There's nothing you can do anyway. Even if there was, you know, it is what it is." And I was like, "You're absolutely right." So. But yeah, that was such a positive experience. It was, he did so well for a kid that hadn't even acted before. He just was amazing. We're hoping to carry on his little acting career now, and he's got himself an agent and he's getting more tapes and he's living his best life.
seeing that representation is firstly crucial, and there needs to be so much more of it. But I would like to see, and they did this in, oh my God, what was it? This is how far behind I am. I've only just watched season one of Bad Sisters. So I don't know if you've watched that.
No,
it's amazing. But this is a really good example of them having that inclusivity and representation, but just not mentioning it. So I just watched that because it was a recommendation, and one of the children in it had Down syndrome, but it was never referenced. And I think that's where we need to get to, isn't it?
100%.
This is going to come across wrong, because it's not that I'm saying it's not great that Kobe was cast as a child with a limb difference, but wouldn't it be amazing to see him cast in a different role that just doesn't ever mention it?
100%. So this is... Obviously, that was a very specific role, and that got him on the ladder of acting and that industry. But 100%, you're absolutely right. So the roles that he's taping for don't have limb difference. They're just a boy age 10 that is, you know, that is needed for this particular role. It doesn't mention anything to do with limb difference or being different. It's just, I want him cast for his talent.
Yeah, because there was this, and she's beautiful. She's called Sofia Sanchez. She was in the latest Hunger Games film. Mm-hmm. She's got Down syndrome.
Yes. I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Not referenced. And it literally makes me want to cry with happiness that this is happening. And yet they might only be small roles. It makes me feel hopeful that the world is going in the right direction. When a lot of the time at the minute, it feels like it absolutely isn't going in the right direction.
Yeah. It's having peaks and troughs, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. No, 100%, Gem. And that's, I'm hoping, like, is next. I'm hoping he does get something else. And, you know, all the feedback he got was amazing. And as you say, I'm hoping that the next role, it's him, and he's playing the part, and it's not referenced, and it's not even an issue. It's just him.
I finished the podcast by asking each of my guests the same two questions. Mm-hmm. And the first one is, what's the best piece of advice that you've been given along the way?
Don't underestimate him, Kobe. Or just children with additional needs. Just don't underestimate them, because I think they will show you what they've got in the locker, shall we say. Yeah. Which I did. You know, when you get that first diagnosis and you kind of go, oh my God, they're not going to be able to do, and it's all the negatives. I'm not going to be able to do this. They're not going to be able to do that. And it's cut all that out and let's focus on what they can do.
I agree. But I think that unfortunately comes from societal stereotypes. And if you haven't ever experienced somebody with that before, maybe you hadn't experienced somebody with a limb difference before. I'd never experienced someone with Down syndrome before. So you are going on those stereotypes that are in your head that are kind of backed up by society, unfortunately, aren't you?
Yeah, for sure. And what you're seeing on social media and the comments that you're reading. Yeah, for sure.
So my other question is, when you had that 20-week scan and they first flagged it, what do you wish you'd known then that you know now?
I just wish I could go back. I wish I really could go back in time and say to myself, just stop worrying. Stop it right now. Enjoy the pregnancy. Because you just think, I don't know, I didn't think my life would be over, but your life changes, and it's hard to kind of adapt to that thought of your life changing when you've got this great life and everything's going fine, and then all of a sudden it's like, hang on a minute, everything, so I wish I could go back and say, stop flapping, stop worrying, stop being so anxious. He's going to be fine, and life isn't going to change how you think it's going to change.
So before you go, you mentioned the Instagram. Do you just want to let everyone know what that Insta handle is? And I'll put it in the show notes as well so that people can find it.
It's just Kobe S. So K_O_B_I_S. So Kobe S. And it's got all his, obviously I run it. He doesn't have anything like that, but I've got his consent.
Yeah.
But so it's his little page, and it's for just like show reels of his acting and his modeling and his football and his Paralympic, because he wants to be a Paralympian as well. Just forgot that. To mention that as well. So just a small thing of like, yeah. So yeah, he's got his hopes on being a Paralympian for England as well. So
I love that he's got big dreams and what sounds like an absolutely lovely family supporting him to achieve those big dreams.
Yeah, we do try our best. We're literally like spinning plates and being Uber and being taxi and that's what our job is.
I agree. Well, Kelly, I'm going to put the Insta handle and both of those charities that you've mentioned in the show notes.
So there's Reach for Children with Upper Limb Differences and the Limbo Foundation as well. So
thank you
for having me, and it's been a pleasure.
Thank you for taking the time, and I know you've had to get rid of your dog to do this because your dog's a barky dog like my dog, so thank you for that as well.
Yes, my sister came round and got him before. I was like, thank you so much.
I love that chat with Kelly. I think it was really interesting because it's a different kind of conversation than the ones that I've had before, because a lot of the people I've spoken to, their children are neurodiverse or they have quite severe disabilities or a genetic condition, where this was something different. And it was really interesting to delve into all the emotions and the feelings attached by getting a diagnosis of a limb difference. And I thought it was also interesting to find that this language issue is kind of across the board, isn't it? And that's something that I'd love to see changing. I've mentioned it so many times on this podcast, but language is so powerful. And like Kelly said, it lays the foundation, doesn't it? How you're told a diagnosis, whatever that is, lays the foundation for the start of your journey. So it matters, doesn't it? But yeah, I really enjoyed that chat. I loved Kelly. I loved hearing all about Kobe and these amazing things that he's doing. And it's great to hear that this amazing 10-year-old boy has these huge hopes and dreams. And she's right, you know, is have these high expectations. Don't put limits on anything. You know, whatever your child's diagnosis is. And I remember when I interviewed Polly in my first episode with a guest, and if you haven't listened to that, I would love you to go back because it's such a powerful episode. And that was the advice that she was given, was have the highest hopes for your children. And, you know, those hopes might be different depending on what your situation is, but the highest hopes that you can have for them. And I think that positive attitude and outlook really, really matters and makes a difference, or it certainly does to me anyway. So as always, thank you for listening. I would love it if you're not already subscribed or following or however your podcast app works. I would love it if you'd do that. I'd love it if you'd leave a 5-star rating or a review, only positive ones, please. And I will be back next week with another fabulous guest for you to listen to.